T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's another beautiful day to be alive. You're listening to Let's Go There with Ciaran Ryan on the new Channel Q on the radio and radio.com. Happy Monday.
I thought you were going to say Happy New Year.
Every day is a new day / new year. Let's just like start from scratch every day.
We should.
Who
Why
cares
not?
About what happened yesterday, all the messed up stuff, feeling bad about yourself? It's a new day, new resolutions.
Woo! The hippie Tony Robbins speak has already started.
Might as well.
I mean, honestly, you don't really do the whole new year, new you thing, do you?
I do new day, new me.
Oh, okay. Come on.
Okay, we've got an awesome show. Let me tell you, as I say this every day.
I was like, as I can hear you breathing through your nose.
Trying to get through it. No, I am actually, I'm excited. I'm feeling it. I have some Ricola and I have my stone, my power stone here. It's not a rock. It's a stone.
It's a rock.
Our cue of the day, our question of the day is all about what's the best way to get over someone? You know, because that's hard when you fall in love, you have heartbreak, and it's, oh, yes, it's Valentine's season. I almost forgot.
Yeah. That's going to be an interesting thing. We should do, especially on our Valentine's Day episode, we should do one dedicated to the single people because, you know what? Valentine's Day is all about love and couples but really, it should be about the single people and what you do.
It's
on that day.
Yeah, it's really about, there's three
Self-care.
Tiers. Let's focus on three tiers. There's the people that are in love. There's the people that are single and not in love. And then there's the people that are heartbroken. Maybe something they just got dumped.
Oh my God, that would be the worst to get dumped right before Valentine's Day.
So yeah, so we want to hear from you for our cue of the day. As we always do, you can give us a call. 833-77-CALL-Q. That's 833-772-2557. Speaking of Valentine's Day, if you don't have any plans, you can hang out with us. Channel Q and the world famous Abby are doing a Love Lines Valentine hookup,
which is super cute because if you follow us at We Are Channel Q, you've probably seen all the amazing promos. But if you haven't, what are you doing with your life?
Well, Dr. Chris Donahue will be broadcasting live from the Abbey on February 14th. A reminder, that's Valentine's Day, from 7 to 9 p.m., answering questions on his show Love Line, Sex, Love, and Dating. Also, there'll be prizes, specialty drinks, and more. So you can go to wearechannelq.com for more details.
Yeah, because if you're single and just sad, just come to Love Line and he'll help you.
Or maybe do that as a date so that you can get free drink tickets and not have to pay if you're cheap.
Yes, daddy. That is a plan.
We also have a doctor joining us. We have a lot of doctors here. Dr. Bettina Love is joining us later in the show. She's a queer black activist who's making schools less racist.
Oh, now I love that, especially being from the South. Honey, I can point out all the racist people in that school.
Yep, and our Let's Go There topic of the day is all about white privilege. Not white privilege, weight privilege.
Oh, and here we go.
Is there such a thing? And it's a really,
for sure.
There's someone who actually was kind of stumped, pranked dating someone, someone who is a plus size.
Thickums, and she, as
yeah,
I like
thickums,
to call them.
And she had this really great article about it, and it brings up this whole idea of weight privilege. And the idea of being pranked while you're dating, that sucks.
It's kind of disrespectful, but to find out more, you just gotta wait and keep listening to the show.
Have you ever been pranked dating? Like,
no
one's ever tricked you, even in the message?
No, because I know men are trash and I don't let them get that close.
Okay. Now we know you've got intimacy issues, or you just are good at,
just picking
filtering.
Out terrible people.
Exactly.
Thank you.
So this Fox News host revealed that he hasn't washed his hands for 10 years.
Oh,
I swear, you can't make this stuff up. Coming up on What's Trending in the News. It's time for What's Trending in the News.
What's trending?
Yes, we need some sort of sound effect like that.
That was cute. That was
a sound effect.
You could have just let it go. You didn't have to let them know I did it right here.
Sorry. Oops, I'm revealing all our magic.
Yeah, you are.
So this is interesting. Over the weekend, this Fox News host revealed his approach to washing hands. And it went viral. And by his approach to washing hands, I mean he does not wash his hands at all.
And honestly, when you say viral, I wonder what else is probably viral in his body. That's really gross.
Exactly. So we're going to play this clip right now. This is Fox News host Pete Hegseth on Fox and Friends Sunday morning.
As I told you, my 2019 resolution is to say things on air that I say off air. I don't think I've washed my hands for 10 years. Really, I don't really wash my hands ever.
Help me.
No, I inoculate myself. It's not, germs are not a real thing. I can't see them, therefore they're not real.
So you're becoming immune to all the
bacteria.
Exactly,
I can't get sick.
So there you go, the latest conspiracy theory coming out of Fox News.
That is the most disgusting thing I've ever heard, and no shade. Honestly, that is like real sounds, real Caucasian-like. It does not shock me that this man had the audacity to go on Fox News and say he has not washed his hands in 10 years. Can you imagine the amount of disgusting things he's done in that 10 years?
I mean, I'm assuming he washes them in the shower, but yeah, it means all the people on that set must be like, okay, we're not going to shake your hand anymore.
No, this is why I don't touch people. This is honestly the reason why I don't touch people, because if I don't see you, like, and especially if you use the bathroom too quick, if you are one of those quick bathroom users and you come back in a second, you didn't do what
that's
you needed
fair.
To do to clean yourself.
That's not fair, because I'm a quick bathroom person.
And I know, it was directed
and
towards you. I don't believe you wash your hands.
I wash my hands all the time.
Like, you actually lather, or do
yes.
you just do a quick little spurt?
No,
because your hands be dry sometimes
no,
coming back.
No, they're not. That is not fair. So this whole admission was, you know, had been prompted because his co-host asked him or called him out for eating leftover day old pizza on the set. So there's like a bunch of things this person is doing.
He's just a disgusting human.
I can't say that.
I can say that.
He's dirty, that's for sure. So he continued to rant about it on Twitter and tried to start this hashtag don't wash movement.
Oh, that is so trifling.
He said, well, let's talk about the people that responded to him. There was this tweet in 1846. This is from Keith Boykin. In 1846, 28-year-old Hungarian doctor Ignaz Semmelweis, I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, but whatever, mm-hmm. began studying why women in maternity wards died at a rate 5 times higher under doctors' care than in midwives' clinics. The answer, the doctors weren't washing their hands. Another one from Bradley Moss. I wonder if Pete Hegseth would be cool with restaurant workers preparing his food after deliberately not washing their hands.
See, now that is a good question. I hope he has never worked in any type of food service industry, because, honey, that is trifling.
So let's be clear. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention highly recommends that people do wash their hands.
Yeah, I bet they do.
Yes.
They want you to be clean.
As they report that 1 gram of human feces, which is about the weight of a paperclip, can contain 1 trillion germs.
And I'm going to throw up. I'm honestly going to vomit.
Let's not get too much into those details, but we do have an expert joining us, because I wanted to debunk this in what's trending in the news.
But okay, when you say expert, what type of expert?
He's a science writer, and he debunks these types of myths that come up in our society.
Okay.
Brian Dunning, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me on. Although I'm still laughing about how you said this went viral.
That was a good pun, right?
That was great.
Thanks.
So, all right, to be clear, like, is this guy right? Does washing hands, does it not keep you from getting germs? Is this like a whole thing that we've been taught to do, maybe because soap companies wanted to like us to buy their soaps?
Are you kidding me?
I'm just saying.
This is
okay,
disgusting.
So in the history of science, there have been 2 great advances that we consider the greatest medical achievements in all of history.
Okay.
Number one is vaccines.
Yes.
Saved more lives than anything else in history. Number two is the germ theory of disease and the need for hygiene.
Oh, okay.
It's
no.
as simple as that.
It's
yes.
very true. It's
because
like...
through most of history, we didn't understand that diseases were caused by germs, basically bacteria and viruses. And although a number of people thought about this and made proposals throughout history, it really wasn't until the end of the 19th century that this became generally accepted and people realized, oh, we've got germs. They float around through the air, they're on surfaces, they're on our hands more than anywhere else, and all you need to do is wash your hands, and that eliminates, you know, 99.9% of the chances you're going to get a disease if you touch your face, rub your eye, you know, touch your tongue, anything like that.
So, all right. So what this Fox News host does is kind of insane. But what about the people that say if you overwash or you can actually make yourself more susceptible to getting sick if you don't let yourself have germs?
That, I mean, on what basis? That's just a nonsensical statement. Mm. If you can get germs off of your hands, that's less chance that they're going to get into your body. It's as simple as that.
And don't you like, because even, I even think about that, like, let's say, you know, I'm taking us there. I'm watching Game of Thrones, and I'm just imagining, like, how disgusting that place smells. If we weren't washing our bodies or our hands, we would be basically Game of Thrones.
Well, you talk about how things smelling disgusting. That was actually what we thought diseases were caused by throughout most of history. They called that miasma. Miasma was this kind of this word for a theoretical sort of mist of illness that if something smelled disgusting, like there was a dead animal rotting or an injury or something, and there was a gross smell, they considered that miasma, and they considered that to be the root of all disease. And so, I mean, these are just pre-scientific times. People were doing their best. They just didn't have our tools.
So what do you
play this clip? Oh, yeah, no, I was going to play this clip again, but I guess we can't.
Well,
it's just so funny.
Real quick, and I think especially if this guy has kids, I feel like he would also be in the type to not vaccinate his kids because he was like, you know, vaccinations aren't, they're all government experience and blah, 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 blah. But so what do you say to people that don't actually take their kids to get vaccinated?
That is a very tough question. I mean, you can see that's one of the biggest failures of science communication in the last few decades. Is how this anti-vaccine movement has only grown in the face of increased communication about the importance of vaccines. People simply dismiss it. They don't believe it. They don't want to hear it. They reject the facts. Actually, my podcast episode coming out next week is on why the arguments against vaccination or why the pro-vaccine arguments have been failing and what we can do about it.
Awesome.
It's a major public health crisis.
All right. Brian Dunning, you are great. Thank you so much for joining us again. What's your podcast called so people could find it?
Skeptoid.com.
Love it. We will always have you back to debunk our science myths.
Oh, and, for sure. I like this guy.
You know, being clean myths, I guess. And by the way, if you want to wash your hands, I've been told, just sing happy birthday while washing your hands. That will fully clean your hands.
Yeah, and I bet you were told that when you were like five,
other
human.
It was an adult thing. I was told by an adult.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you. And that does it for What's Trending in the News. That was a deep news segment. Thank you. Coming up, we're moving into top stories in pop culture and entertainment. So what's coming up in afternoon tea?
All right. So did the Grammy shade Drake during his award speech? We're diving into that and all of the Grammys extravaganza and the drama coming up in 7 minutes.
That was awesome. You're listening to Let's Go There with Sharon Ryan on the new Channel Q on the radio and radio.com. It is time for some afternoon tea, top stories in pop culture and entertainment. So what's the tea, Ryan?
All right, honey. So this afternoon tea is all Grammys edition because the show was last night, of course.
Yep.
And it's music's biggest night. And it was kind of really good. I felt like a lot of people were like, oh, we're not sure. Like, because a lot of, you know, big stars were saying they were boycotting because of the Grammys, you know, obviously being gross and trash and the you know, all these, it was a whole bunch of drama surrounding these award shows. Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of one huge celebrity that had said he was kind of boycotting and he wouldn't be there after being declined, you know, he declined he was going to perform. Drake, he actually appears he appears at the show that no one knew like he was going to do, and because he actually won Best Rap Song for his song God's Plan, and he actually gave a really interesting speech that the Grammys kind of necessarily really didn't like. Let's play the
You've already won. If you have people who are singing your songs word for word, if you're a hero in your hometown, Look, if there's people who have regular jobs who are coming out in the rain, in the snow, spending their hard-earned money to buy tickets to come to your shows, you don't need this right here, I promise you. You already won. But next, a special...
Yeah, so when he said, you don't need this right here, he was pointing to his Grammy, and he was basically saying, guess what? You don't need the Grammy to make you feel important,
which
Grammys probably did not like.
But do you think they cut him off because of that, or because they just needed to cut him off because it was like a commercial time?
Well, here's the thing, and I'm glad you actually said that. Producers actually said they rushed to him because there was a natural like pause in between like that last statement, and he took a breath, and the producers thought he was done, and they cut to commercial. commercial, and everyone obviously was like, oh my God, how, you know, rude, because the drama has been, you know, surrounding the Grammys and everything, and Drake actually shows up out of nowhere. They're like, oh, y'all were being super, super shady, and you cut him off, and that's not a good look for the Grammys, because it's now like you're silencing your top artist.
Yeah, it could be awkward because he was talking about, he was referencing the Grammy, yeah, and if he already had drama, but they had cut off a lot of different people.
Well, of course, they have, but I think this show was so different because the Grammys have been kind of, you know, in some ways, kind of bullying their talent, the bigger talents.
Really?
Because it's like, yeah, because a lot of the big stars that we haven't seen, like the Ariana Grande, which we'll be touching on a little bit later in Afternoon Tea, because there's a whole bunch of drama surrounding her and Cardi B and everything.
Ooh.
Yeah. But it's one of those things where, you know, you've seen Ariana Grande and now Nicki Minaj calling out producers of the Grammys, saying they were bullied by them for not, you know, doing what they want super quickly, or like, you know, creating their, you know, performing when they wanted them to. And if they're, you know, if they don't win the like basically the award, then they're not showing up. And it's kind of like now they're being bullied. And I think the Grammys is kind of really receiving some backlash, because honestly, if Beyonce's not there, is anybody really watching?
I mean, it's true. Well, you know, they did have a really difficult year. I think that they're going through a transition. Neil Portnow, who is the head, had to step down because of his controversial comments.
Right.
And so I think that with that, like, and I knew some people internally at the Grammys, the Recording Academy. And with that said, I think a lot of things were disorganized this year.
For sure.
And so that's why they probably were going to people like, hey, can you do this? Can you get this done? And they're like, are you kidding? You're supposed to have your stuff together.
Exactly. And I think the one good thing about this show this year, besides all of the like the little bits of shade, which I loved, it was very juicy, was how women took the center stage because of those controversial comments of, you know, like you said, the CEO was saying, you know, women need to step up.
Yeah, the president.
The president was saying that, you know, women need to step up. Well, and to be honest, women have stepped up this year at the Grammys. You know, host Alicia Keys, she actually invited who she called her sisters on stage, Lady Gaga, Jada Pinkett Smith, Jennifer Lopez, and girl, when you should have saw the crowd erupt as soon as Michelle Obama came onto the stage, basically said one word, like one syllable, maybe like opened her mouth, and the crowd was like, ah! Like, it was like insane.
Yeah, she was the real rock star, it seemed, at the Grammys.
Yeah, and they basically all of them told a personal story of how music changed their life, and it was just very beautiful.
Yeah.
And one actually moment that stood out to me was, of course, Lady Gaga, who had a huge night. I mean, she won 3 awards, including Best Pop Performance for Joanne, her album, which no one really even thought that was like a thing anymore. And then Best Pop Duet for Shallow, of course. From her Oscar-nominated film, A Star Is Born. And then she also won Best Original Song at the BAFTA Awards internationally at the same time she won for Best Pop Duo. So, girl, she was, like, getting some international winning. Like, that's, like, some awesome moment.
I love it.
But her speech was all about mental health, and I thought we should play a little clip of that because it's very important.
I just want to say I'm so proud to be a part of a movie that addresses mental health issues. They're so important. And a lot of artists deal with that. And we got to take care of each other. So if you see somebody that's hurting, don't look away. And if you're hurting, even though it might be hard, try to find that bravery within yourself to dive deep and go tell somebody and take them up in your head with you. I love you. Thank you so much to the Grammys. Thank you.
Oh, Lady Gaga.
I know. Don't you just love how low-key dramatic Lady Gaga is at times?
Yes, I love it.
But it's the epitome of pop culture. Like, we all live for those moments. But, you know, it's all good. And there was so much, like, woman empowerment. But there was also some women shading each other. And we're going to be talking about who did Ariana shade during last night's show. Well, keep on listening to Afternoon Tea, a Grammys edition, coming up in 7 minutes.
We are back. You're listening to Let's Go There with Ciaran Ryan on the new Channel Q, on the radio and radio.com. We are continuing with our Afternoon Tea top stories in pop culture and entertainment. So what's the tea, Ryan?
Now, no one had a better night than Cardi B, of course,
after winning
and making history for becoming the first solo woman to win Best Rap Album. But Ariana Grande threw some shade that no one was prepared for. So in a series of now deleted tweets, Grande expressed frustration that the family of her late ex-boyfriend, Mac Miller, was invited to the Grammys despite the fact that Miller basically lost his category, which was Best Rap Album, to Cardi B. So she basically tweeted, she said, which is bleep, like an F word. She tweeted, F.
Yeah.
Like crap. And then she tweeted after that saying trash and literal BS. And at first some thought she was referring to Cardi's win, but which a lot of people thought that because they were like, wow, she's automatically coming for Cardi B. And plus everyone knows that Ariana is very, very close with Nicki Minaj. Like they have a, they're like, they're really good friends.
Yeah, they're a squad.
But Grande later clarified, saying that it had nothing to do with her. She then responded to fans' tweet explaining that Miller's family was invited to the ceremony only to watch him lose, writing, this is what I meant. Karen was going to have a green suit made, referring to Miller's mother, Karen Myers. Now, I do find this a little, you know, kind of shady in some way, because I get Cardi B deserved that. It was a huge win. And also, Cardi B ended up posting an article that I guess the U.S. like Us Weekly had, you know, basically talked to Mac Miller's family, saying, guess what, you know, if Mac Miller doesn't win, who would you want to win? And they said, we fully support Cardi B, we would love.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Cardi actually dedicated this award to Mac Miller on a video that she ended up posting after her award speech.
Yeah, I saw that.
Which was super hilarious, by the way. I kind of want to play a little clip of her moment. This is my favorite
it's
moment
so awesome.
From this speech. Let's play it. Oh, we're getting there. Let's do it.
Da-na. Ooh, the nerves are so bad. Maybe I need to start smoking weed.
Now that's a mood.
Oh, that was her acceptance speech. But then she did another video on her Instagram. That she was with like her whole crew and just freaking out and thanking everyone that she didn't get to
stage. There was way too many cuss words in that one. I couldn't put that one on the radio because it would have just been bleep, 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 bleep.
But that one included her referencing Mac Miller again.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, yeah, it just seems like, you know, we already knew that there was this issue or like that this was coming up. So why would Ariana continue to put it in front of people in that way?
Well, no, I here's the thing. I think Ariana, one, puts her foot in her mouth a lot sometimes, especially with now this huge, bigger spotlight on her than what it was. And I think at this point, she probably could have got away with these tweets maybe, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago. But the fact that all, like, eyes are on her, and then the fact that it's a Mac Miller thing and he's involved in it, I understand why she's was upset, because, dude, why fly his family all the way out there for them to watch them lose? Like, they should have done
of respect.
No, like, but they should have done a special moment. I think even when they did the in memorial thing that they did, they only showed a small clip of him. And I think his death was one of the biggest deaths that we've seen in music history. Like, not history, but in music as of, like, recent history.
Yeah.
And I think it was very impacting. And, you know, I think the Grammys could have done a better way of acknowledging that, or even had, you know, setting a moment where the family was on stage and got to see the arena full of people clapping.
Yeah, that would have been good.
And so I get it. I understand it. But also, she just did it at the wrong time. It was just like, girl, now this looks like you're being shady, and you didn't want Cardi B to win at all.
Yeah,
like, it's just terrible timing. And she just continues to kind of do this where she puts her little foot in her mouth.
Yeah, I mean, it happens, and her thigh high boot in her mouth.
Either way, but she actually also had a good night because she won her first Grammy last night. So
she did.
Yeah, she won it for Best Pop Vocal Album for Sweetener.
But she wasn't there.
No, she was not there because, you know, like I said earlier in the segment, she obviously, the Grammys have been kind of playing with artists, and they're just not having it. But if you want to check out more Afternoon Tea and anything else, head over to wearechannelq.com and theradio.com app for more.
Yep, we are Let's Go There with Sharon Ryan on the new Channel Q on the radio and radio.com. We are here for you daily, catching you up on everything you might have missed throughout the day, from pop culture, current events, LGBTQ+ news, our crazy lives, and more. 4 to 7 p.m. Pacific weekdays. And guess what? You can hang out with us on Valentine's Day evening. That's right. Channel Q and the world famous Abby are doing Loveline's Valentine Hookup, where Dr. Chris will be broadcasting live from the Abbey on February 14th from 7 to 9 p.m., answering your sex, love, and dating questions. And there's going to be prizes, specialty drinks, and more. And even we might be stopping by after the show.
Oh, for sure. And who doesn't love free therapy, honey?
True. Well, head over to wearechannelq.com for more details. There you go. And now joining us on the show, we have got a queer black activist making schools less racist, professor and author. She has a lot of titles under her belt.
Oh, yes, she does.
And she has a really cool book out called We Want to Do More Than Survive. I mean, not just cool, very interesting and relevant. Abolitionist Teaching and the Pursuit of Educational Freedom. Please welcome Dr. Bettina Love. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Sarah and Ryan. I really appreciate it for having me on.
Yes. So tell us about this book, quite the title.
Which I'm so happy, and I saw a picture of you, and let me just say this out and get this out of the open. You are fine.
Oh, thank you.
Yes.
You started an interview, Ryan.
I saw the long, I was like, I saw the, I don't know, I couldn't tell if they were dreads or braids, but I was like, yes, please.
There's 20 years in the game. Locked for 20 years.
Yes, it's beautiful. Okay, so yeah, tell us about your book.
Thank you so much. So I started writing a book. So my other area of research is hip-hop, and I started writing this book on hip-hop, and I was going to do this whole thing on hip-hop civics, and then Trump got elected.
Oh.
And I had to throw everything away, and I had to try to, I wanted to try and write something that meant something to teachers, and I wanted to write something where teachers who thought the rhetoric of hate, the rhetoric of division was okay.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you teach black and brown children and still support that type of rhetoric?
Interesting.
So I wanted to write a book that really got at the heart of that and talked about black and brown children's issues, but also their beauty.
I love that. I think especially because I grew up in the South. I'm originally from Nashville. And I think this was something that I feel like I dealt with in the educational system of one. I feel like a lot of either marginalized, you know, communities, being black, being brown, being gay, all these things where if teachers are not educated on how to deal with either certain demographics, it can be very hard for black or brown students to feel like, hey, they actually want me to be here and learn and, and you know, gain something. So it's what. What is one thing in this book that is kind of, you know, like you're saying, you're helping teach teachers this, but how are you guiding that conversation when it comes to educators and understanding the black and brown experience?
So I think the first thing I try to do in this book is really talk about the beauty of being black and brown and not this idea of the gimmicks of the grit and the resiliency, but to place it in a historical context. Who in their right mind tries to deal with racism for 400 years and you say that we don't have grit?
Right.
So I want teachers to try to reframe and rethink about the language they've been given. Or we have conversations that say, well, you know, we have an achievement gap in this country. We don't have an achievement gap. You had 250 years of slavery, 90 years of Jim Crow, 60 years of you saying you're going to do something and not living up to your promises. You can't say there's an achievement gap when you created the gap.
Mm.
And so one of the first things I try to do with the book is to really challenge teachers to understand language, or we call students at risk. At risk of what?
Yeah.
Or they're underserved. By whom? Like, we never complete these sentences. So that's really one of the first things I try to do is help teachers understand how the language that we use, even when we're trying to do our best to understand our students, doesn't allow us that room. And then the second thing I really try to do in the book is tell teachers to get involved. You know, that's what abolitionist teaching is about, is to get involved. Loving your students or being kind to your students or, you know, Ryan, you're like, you're from the South, saying bless your heart, that's not enough.
Yeah. That's very true. That's like a very good go-to. That's a good...
Right, bless, you know, bless his heart.
Yeah. And honestly, that's like a, kind of like saying no shade, because it can be very shady, depending on the country person you meet. That's a very shady thing to say.
Yes, it is.
Now, Dr. Bettina Love, again, is joining us. We are talking about her book, We Want to Do More Than Survive, Abolitionist Teaching and the Pursuit of Educational Freedom. Now, I just find this really interesting and important, because guess what? If you're not an educator, you still have kids. And, you know, who are in school. And then also kids just dealing with other kids. And we need to bring everyone together. And, like, this idea that we're all separate because we're in different communities or from, you know, in different places in life or race or this or that. Like, it's this idea that we're siloed. We live apart when all, you know, we're a collective consciousness. So I guess, you know, coming from that position, what lessons can we learn from abolitionist teaching?
So that's I love the entry. I love how you set that up, because you're exactly right. And the reason why I called this book Abolitionist is number one is where I'm from. I was born and raised in upstate New York, Rochester, New York. And Rochester, New York is, you know, a hop and a skip from Canada. Mm-hmm. So when you got to Rochester, New York, as an enslaved African, you were close to freedom. But the reason why I wanted to talk about abolitionists is because abolitionists took risks for other people. They were black, they were brown, they were Latino, they were Asian. I mean, we think about this country just being black and white. No, it wasn't. They were indigenous, and all those people got together and took risks. Some took small risks, some took big risks. Some were bakers, some were bankers, some were writers, some were teachers, some were doctors. They were all types of people from all different ethnicities, from all different religions, who took risks for freedom for black people. See, and that's what we have to get back to.
And I love that. And I think one thing, especially when we come back from the break, I want to touch on kind of a privilege aspect that a lot of teachers have in this, especially being white, and other white students probably have this as well. And I want to kind of touch on that. And if your book even, you know, touches on kind of the privilege in educational systems.
Are back. Welcome. Yes. You're listening to Let's Go There with Chiron Ryan on the new Channel Q on the radio and radio.com. We're continuing this really interesting conversation with Dr. Bettina Love, who is a queer black activist making schools less racist.
Which I love.
Yeah, what an important mission.
I mean, especially during Black History Month where everybody has been trying it.
Also, check out her book, We Want to Do More Than Survive, Abolitionist Teaching and the Pursuit of Educational Freedom. Welcome back.
Oh, thank you all for having me. This is great.
Oh, yay. No, of course. So I know the conversations of privilege and what that looks like can be very difficult to have with a lot of people, especially non-people of color. How are you tackling that in your book in making sure it's a message of inclusion and where people don't feel like they are
attacked?
Are attacked.
Right. So you know what? Since I'm a researcher, that's what I do full time. I really try to lean on like other people's work for that. And there's some really good white folk who are talking about that. There's a great book called White Fragility. And the one thing that she talks about in this book, Robin DiAngelo, is that you have to let white folks address their emotions. And you just can't think you're going to enter one conversation about racism and privilege and then everything's going to be good. This is the country that needs therapy.
That's true. You know,
I always say that if black folks ever get reparations, we need therapy and white folks need therapy. That needs to be part of the reparation package.
That's amazing. And listen, my family's from Canada and I had to have a conversation about privilege with them at my dinner table on Friday night. And let me tell you, I just scratched the surface. I thought I was getting somewhere, but, you know, we have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, honey. It's rough.
Do.
And it's important that, you know, I think that people of color have that conversation with themselves and their communities, but the conversations that need to be had are the conversations with both sides, because that's the only way change happens is when we're there for each other and to make it happen together.
So one thing I try to talk about in the book is, and there's a lot of good language from the activist community about this, is, you know, we've had allies, and allies are cute. You know, those are people who come to the rallies, and those are the people who know all the language, they read all the books, and they'll tell you all the different labels that they have, and that's great. But what we need are co-conspirators.
Oh. Come on, you better say that word.
I'm making notes right now.
Cher's over here making notes.
I'm not going to call myself an ally anymore.
You know, no. Here's the thing, I'm honestly so happy that I'm not the only black person educating Cher today, so this is beautiful.
Continue.
You know, it's Canada.
Right.
So yeah, I talk in a book about, you know, what it means to be a co-conspirator, what it means to take risks for somebody, what it means to walk in a room and be quiet and just listen. You know, as the old folks say, get your lesson.
Yes.
So just sit there and get your lesson and listen to us, understand us, and then study. Don't come to rallies and come to meetings and you haven't done your own internal work. All you're going to do is recenter yourself, because that's what whiteness does. And so I really talk in the book about what it means to be an ally and what it means to be a co-conspirator, because abolitionists were co-conspirators. And so allies don't get us far enough. And I use the example of Bree Newsom, who took down that flag in South Carolina.
But
what we don't talk about is James Tyson that was with her, the white man.
The people around her.
The people around her and the risk that they took. And there was a moment when the police said they were going to electrocute Bree Newsom. And that white man said, you know what? I'm going to put my hand on this flagpole. And just by him putting his hand on the flagpole, that saved that black woman's life.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, and we've even seen that touch on Hollywood where, you know, Octavia Spencer said her white co-star actually spoke up for her to get more mm-hmm. money. And it's one of those mm-hmm. things where it's like you have to be able to risk your comfortability to
that's
help
right.
bring everyone around you to the same level where you are. And I think that's why that's so important. And what is the real definition of an ally? Because I feel like we have these conversations.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, I feel like some people just see it as like, oh, yeah, I did my good deed for the day.
Yes, it's a checklist.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this
social justice is not a checklist.
This is so interesting. And how, I guess, thoughts on, I guess, our day-to-day lives. I mean, like, what? How can we be more of co-conspirators? Like, I'm interested because this is, like, the first time I've heard that, and I'm really, I'm interested in that. And this is something I'm sure a lot of people are listening and saying, like, oh, wow, checking themselves right now.
Right. So I think one of the first things is to check your privilege, is to walk into spaces thinking about your privilege. And then I talk about it in the book is that, you know, white folks, and I also talk about men too, who walk around with this privilege, black men and white men.
Yes.
I talk about them and you know, straight folks. I talk about, you know, when you have this privilege, it doesn't have to be like I'm going to go and lay my body down. That's great, but it could be the everyday things. If you run an organization and you look around the table and there's no people of color, then you're not doing your job. If you look, if you are the HR person and you know that every person of color is being underpaid, then you can do something about that.
Mm.
Right. That's what we, that are the little small day-to-day things that we could be doing to help folks out. You got to want to see black folks win.
Yeah. You, well, I want to see everyone win.
The fact
right?
that you came on Channel Q and started preaching, I love it.
Again, I want to let everyone know where to find you. Dr. Bettina Love, check out her book, We Want to Do More Than Survive, Abolitionist Teaching and the Pursuit of Educational Freedom. We're going to have a link on our website.
Yes.
Yeah, we are channelq.com. And where can they find you on Instagram?
Yeah, so Twitter and Instagram is Be Love Soul Power.
Well, love it. Thank you so much for all
Thank
that wisdom.
You
and you made us definitely think about a lot today and more action, right? I
yes,
feel like
yes,
more action
yes.
needs to happen and just understanding where we our place in all of this. So
yeah.
thank you for that.
Thank you both for having me. This was wonderful. Thank
oh,
you.
Oh, you're so sweet. Love it. Okay, coming up, we continue to go there with our Let's Go There topic of the day. White privilege. Is there such a thing?
And we said wait, not white. Because we were just talking about it.
Coming up, we are getting into our Let's Go There topic of the day. And it has to do with weight privilege. And what does that mean? Is there such a thing? Well, we are getting into it right now. This was actually inspired by an article we saw by style and lifestyle blogger Stephanie Yeboah, whose Twitter is at nerdabouttown. She basically found out a man she was dating did it for a dare. And it sparked a conversation about body positivity and weight privilege. And we have a special guest joining us. Megan Tonjes, body positivity advocate, activist, musician, YouTube star extraordinaire.
I mean, just basically queen and should be ruling the world.
What an intro.
There you go. Take that one to the bank. So,
I love it.
Megan, you saw this article and you talk a lot about, you know, I would say how people look at weight issues, being someone who is someone who you consider yourself plus size. And so when you read this, were you surprised that this happened? Like, and have you ever had someone do this to you? It seems pretty gross.
Oh, I wasn't surprised at all.
I mean, either.
I think this is more common than people realize. And I think, I mean, this was stuff that was happening to me in middle school and high school, of people pretending to like you or pretending their friend likes you. And it's all to prank them or it's for a bet. So I mean, this is something that's happening. And I think if people are shocked by it, they're just not paying attention.
Yeah, it's one of those things, especially I feel like because there's such, even in the gay community, I've spoken about it on this show, about the weight standards in the gym culture that is so negative to, in diet culture that is so negative to just being a person that is thickums, as I like to call it. I mean, if you own the word plus size, you should, but I love the word thickums. That's
like
me,
that
and
too.
That's sassy, and you bet it's delicious.
Yeah.
But I think it's one of those things where I honestly, I also also wasn't shocked about this. And I think a lot of times men, you know, try to, in this case, people try to categorize their preferences and say, oh, it's just a preference that I don't like you. But then what's the line that toes of it being, you know, just straight up disrespectful and just rude to saying, oh, mm-hmm. We have a preference?
Yeah, I mean, I think people have to be critical of where they're getting their preferences from. If you know that you like something, but you're not questioning why you like something, or if it's the only thing you've seen, or if you've been taught that this is better than that, I think as adults, we need to start asking ourselves why we prefer certain things and how, you know, society has played into that and conditioned us to see certain bodies as less than others.
Definitely. And she talks about this in this article, how on dating apps, she'll actually write, you know, plus size. Is that something
for
that...
For what? She,
yeah, that's
pictures.
Why. Well, let's talk about that. Like, why should people do that? Why are people deciding to do that?
Well, I think, I mean, I haven't been on dating apps in a minute, but when I was on dating apps, I would always make sure I included a full body photo so that no one showed up to a date and then all of a sudden was really cruel to me. And I think it's just a matter of feeling like, okay, well, I want you to know who I am and how I look so that whatever issues you have with a body type, you're not bringing that to a situation that should be happy and should be about meeting someone. So people showing up and acting as if, oh, I don't know what you look like, it just lessens the, you know, that happening.
So I guess, how do you, at this point, especially if you are on dating apps, do you just get, you know, good at becoming, you know, like, oh, this guy's trash and I know he's going to be, like, problematic? Because there was also a show on AMC, I don't know if you are familiar with it, it's called Dietland, and they kind of touched on that in some ways, and I was actually a really big fan of that show where I was like, wow, this is very interesting. I feel like it brings in the story of kind of, like, dealing with body issues and also finding yourself attractive and people take you seriously. I even kind of deal with that in some ways. Like, is this just this guy that has this weird fat fetish in some way? Like, you know? Mm. And I think a lot of people don't talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a fetishization. And, like, Dietland was a great show. My friend Joy was the lead character on that. And, I mean, I think
she
that it was such a different way. She was amazing. It was such a different way of looking at it and really questioning, like, why we feel these things and why we do these things to each other. What it really comes down to is the way that people treat other people is based on how we talk about other people and how it's prioritized, like how people are cheered on and patted on the back for being really awful about people's bodies. And it's only recently that we're starting to push back and have these conversations where it's not okay when you don't know people are connecting all kinds of things to someone's body, including their worth. And that's just not fair. It's not okay.
Definitely. Megan Tonja is again joining us. She's a musician, a social media star, body positivity activist. Now, in this article that we're referencing, you know, the author talks about going on this date and then finding out it was a dare and her being plus size. She decided to write this article that we're talking about right now and actually got backlash from dudes that suck, assuming, and a conversation emerged about weight privilege. So what is weight privilege? We want to talk about that after this break, our Let's Go There topic of the day. We are continuing our Let's Go There topic of the day with our special guest, Megan Tonjes. You could find her on social media, YouTube. She has amazing music and also talks about some really important things, including body positivity. So what better guest to have for our topic today about weight privilege than Megan? Welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
So, finally, the big question: what is weight privilege?
Oh man,
can we talk about? Can we unpack that? Because we've talked about obviously white privilege a lot.
Yes,
we've talked about pretty privilege, skinny privilege, so weight privilege.
Yes, I mean, I think what it comes down to in a conversation that people don't want to have because it feels uncomfortable, and everyone wants to benefit from things like body positivity, is that there are just certain bodies that are treated differently. And it's not just when it comes to dating or how people are viewed in relationships and how they're treated. It also comes down to things like when you're employed and how much you're paid, when you go to the hospital and how they treat you, even how they talk to you based on your body and what they assume about you. So I think there's a lot that goes into anytime you're at any kind of intersection and body positivity. A lot of times we see people that are kind of chubby and white, and really the people that are fighting for what we're talking about are like fat black trans women. So we need to just be aware that the people that need to benefit the most from these conversations are people that are at the forefront of it. And, you know, there is a privilege to walking into the world and being seen a certain way because of your body and because of the worth that's associated. If you're out there eating whatever you're eating and people look at you and think, oh, they're fine, as opposed to, oh, they're dying, they need to be on a diet, it changes how people interact with you, and it changes how you're treated and ultimately your experience of being a person in the world.
Yeah. So why then, just, and this is a real question, like, why would it not be called like a discrimination? Why is it a privilege? Why is privilege associated with it? Because isn't privilege meaning like you're getting benefits versus, seems like there's no benefits here? Or are
well,
there,
I
like,
think
that's
the way I took white privilege is not just specifically for the plus size community. I think it's also for thin or skinny people as well, because there's a privilege that I think all of us have in some way. But I think in this case, it shows that depending on what weight you are and the amount of privilege you may have over another group in that same kind of weight category. And so I think it's something to be talking about when it comes to this conversation.
Yeah, I think a lot of us, if not all of us, benefit from some kind of privilege. Even when if you are fat and you're being treated a certain way, if you're able-bodied, you're already being treated differently and better than someone who isn't. So I think just the privilege is essentially walking into the world and not immediately being counted out and treated as less than based on certain things like how you look.
Yes.
Definitely. And we actually have a clip from Stephanie, the author of this article we're referencing. And just to recap, if there's some new people listening, this woman ended up going on a date with this guy and it was all a dare. And she later found that out. She herself identifies as someone who's plus size. And so this created a whole conversation about weight privilege and a lot of people, like specifically guys, backlashing at her for writing this article.
Because what do I say? Men are trash.
Okay, so let's play this clip from Stephanie, the author.
You know, for people to sort of go out of their way to humiliate someone without thinking about the consequences of that person, it really speaks to how plus size women are treated in general. So if we are not the, you know, happy-go-lucky, chubby, bumbling sidekick, then we are sitting at home depressed in ice cream. There's nothing... We're not presented as multifaceted human beings who can be successful and can have our own thoughts, feelings, and emotions. And I think because of this approach that people take towards plus size women, we are dehumanized to the point where we're just seen as vessels purely for humiliation or sexual pleasure and nothing in between.
That's very intense.
Oh,
that was Stephanie, the author of this article, just talking about what she perceived as her treatment from these men, and specifically this date she went on where he did it. He revealed that he dated her as a dare.
You know what? And one thing that I loved about that is the fact that she called that out, like saying that, you know, most plus size women are looked at as kind of like, let's, and no shade to Rebel Wilson, but because she blocked me, I have a personal vendetta against her.
That's like a name drop that she blocked you, though.
Yeah, whatever. But, you know, she basically, it's you know, everyone feels like the plus size girl or the plus size boy falls into those funny characters. It's more, there's depth to this, and that's why I love the show Dietland so much, because it didn't show a person like that. It showed kind of a perception of them thinking she was like that, but she wasn't anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, there's another show coming out called Shrill by Lindy West, which is a really good book talking about her experience, and I think that the author and everything just hit it right on the head, which is, especially when it comes to fat bodies, we are either hypersexualized or we've seen it completely not sexual.
Yeah.
And there's no in between. There's no variation. There's no layers. And I think that a lot of times that is representation. But it's also just we're not used to talking about people as people. Mm. And I think that, you know, this was just an example in one of many, this guy going on this date for a dare. This is something we see on college campuses with hazing, where they want you to hook up with the ugliest or the fattest girl and you get points based on it. So this is not new, and it all boils down to how we grow up seeing other people as less than us and how we feel like we have dominion over them and not caring about their feelings or seeing them as multifaceted in any kind of way.
I guess and obviously that is a huge takeaway. As someone who's in the dating space right now, Megan, I assume, I haven't hung out with you in a bit, but are you single?
I am, thank God.
So, I know. She's the ultimate single person,
I mean,
by
but
the way.
Yeah, but also Megan pulls me.
I know.
Like, oh,
but
yes.
I was going to say, I guess, like, at one, what's the takeaway and tips? Because you do keep yourself busy.
Come on.
And and what are you thinking or feeling like it's like in the dating world right now?
Oh, my God. I mean, it's such a disaster in Los Angeles, especially.
Well, that's, I thought this was going to be a bit more positive, but hey.
No, I mean, I think this is what it comes down to. At the end of the day, it's not hard to date someone or find like a boyfriend or girlfriend or whoever. It really is about someone that sees the value in you and is going to help you grow as a person. And so I think instead of us latching on to just what we're used to, we just need to be more open to people that we deserve and also encourage people and teach people how to treat us. And I think that this is just part of the re-education of letting men know you can't do this without some kind of shame attached to it, and you shouldn't be ashamed for doing this.
Okay, Megan Tonjes.
Yes.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Follow her everywhere at Megan Tonjes. It is time for our cue of the day, our question of the day. Out with the old, in with the new. What's the best way of getting over someone?
Oh, yeah.
It's Valentine's week, and either it's time to, you know, get in bed with someone or get over them.
It's always how to get over is how to get under. Yeah. It's like how to get over
something
someone.
Like that.
You got to be under them to do it.
Okay.
I don't
know. Well, you just
is that how it goes?
That's what everyone made jokes about. Anyway, let's just be clear, since we just went on a rant that you might not realize what our question of the day is. What's the best way of getting over someone?
There we go.
We want to hear from you. 833-77-CALL-Q. 833-772-2557. And yes, we already have people answering on social media.
We sure do.
And a lot of people are making jokes about how to get over someone. You get under them.
Yeah, they are. But we've actually gotten some pretty good responses that are worth some meaty, you know. I'll be reading those. I think, you know, once you get past the joke, obviously, there's some really good responses in there that I feel like should be said.
So, you know, it actually has been easier in the past for me to get over someone that I've been in a long relationship with, because I was like, I feel like I've fought hard. You know, we did what we got to do. Sometimes it's harder to get over like those quickies, right? Or because it's the infatuation relationships, because that's all about chemistry and chemicals. Like when you go through a relationship, the dopamine effect is gone.
So wait, the longer you've been with someone, it's harder for you. I mean, it's easier for you.
It's not I feel like I've been through what I needed to be through. I saw it. I felt it. There's almost like,
that's very self-aware closure of you though.
There's closure versus when I feel like it's someone that I didn't have a chance to get to know, or I idealize them or romanticize them. In my head, I'm like, I still don't really know.
Yeah.
It's harder for me to get over that idea that I imagined or I had in my head. It's more of an ego thing, right?
Yeah.
Versus when you're in long-term relationships, I feel like you've cut through your ego. At that point, I mean, it's more you've been connecting authentically, hopefully.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like, if it's done, I feel like you've given it your all. If it's meant to be, it will come back around. Whereas, yeah, I don't know. My ego gets in the way of the shorter term stuff, and that's when it's harder to get over the person.
Mm.
Like one thing I do, where if I have a text and they haven't responded, I'll delete the text. I'm a deleter.
Oh, okay.
I'll delete and
so
I'll
funny
have
you
their
just
info
said that.
Because I don't like cutting people's info out completely. I did it once with someone that really got under my skin. Only because I couldn't stop thinking about the person, so yeah. I was worried that I was going to reach out.
Yeah.
And so I just was like, yeah, delete, delete, delete.
Well, I am kind of the complete opposite when it comes into terms of, like, obviously, if I'm with someone long term, I feel like that's the hardest to, like, kind of, you know, readjust your life, get over them, and, like, not have to think about them being there because they were such a part of your life for such a long time.
Yeah.
It's hard to, it's kind of like, what's your new normal? And so, for short terms, though, I'm actually okay with, like, being like, bye, cut off, we're done, because I don't have time to waste my time. But I've actually recently kind of got into something where at one point I was like, you know what? I'm cutting it off. I'm not going to talk to him, like, maybe for like a while, like maybe a couple weeks, and I'm just going to let it chill because I felt like my emotions were getting too heavily involved.
And is this something new for you?
It is too. Yeah, it's very new. First of all,
maybe
feelings,
you're hanging around me too
feelings
much.
Are not my thing. And so I feel like now Shira Lazar's crazy is rubbing off on me. And I'm like, what am I supposed to do? So I was literally about to delete our text thread because I've already muted his posts and stories on my Instagram.
You did?
Yeah, because I don't want to see them. And I was going to delete his thread on my text messages, but there's some really good pictures in there. That I don't want to get rid of. Yeah, but then that's kind of weird because now I'm like collecting a folder of nudes, and that's just weird.
Don't you have a folder of nudes already?
That's my personal. But I think it's one of these things where it can be really tough to get over someone, especially if you don't have someone automatically that you can kind of have like as a rebound.
That's what sucks though, because
rebounds are crucial.
No, it is, but that's also dangerous because then you're always looking for someone to fill the gap versus sometimes it's important to be on your own and take that time to yourself.
True.
Or else you're constantly feeding the machine, the love addiction machine.
But even then, even when you have this time to yourself, I think everyone talks about that. It's like, oh yeah, you need to take time for yourself. Find out who you really are. But honey, no one talks about the horniness you experience while you're trying to find out who you are and how you need a rebound and you need somebody just to sleep with you so you can feel comfortable in your bed again. Like, no one talks about that in between of like, oh yeah, I'm finding out who I am and what I want, and I'm taking a thank you next moment, Ariana Grande, and just talking to yourself. But honey, I'm tired of myself. I need a man.
I wonder what Ariana Grande does in her thank you next. She left us hanging.
Girl.
Ariana Grande needs to tell
Ariana
us
Ariana Grande
what
is
she
a fraud.
Does.
She found some man. She found a man when she needed some.
You
That's
think
what
so.
She did, for sure.
Or a woman.
Or a woman. Halsey, yeah. We talked about it in afternoon tea.
That would be the ultimate hookup. I mean, if she did that, I'm bowing down to Queen Ariana.
Well, I want to know what you guys think. Especially, give us some tips on what you think. You know, what's the easy way of getting over someone?
Exactly. Our Q of the day. Give us a call, 833-77-CULL-Q, 833-772-2557. I would say deleting the messages helps. Obviously, you've said muting from the Instagram and all that.
Oh, for sure.
Also, just, I guess, not hanging in the same spaces that person might be.
Oh, well, I would hope you really weren't doing that
friends and everything.
Yeah.
So we're going to get into some more expert advice after this. We have some very specific tips to share because I know there's someone out there going through this. But if you're in love and you want a place to hang out for Valentine's Day, or maybe you're single and you're ready to mingle, we have the place for you.
Oh, yes.
Channel Q and the world famous Abby are doing Loveline's Valentine hookup February 14th from 7 to 9 p.m. Loveline will be broadcasting live from the Abbey. This is going to be an awesome show. You could have all your questions answered from sex, love, and dating. And also great prizes, specialty drinks, and more. And we're going to stop by because
maybe.
I don't have any... Do you have Valentine's plans?
You don't know. I'm out here trying to find a man, honey.
Wow.
Hit me up. Find me.
Okay. Head over to wearechannelq.com.
I'll be there. I have to support Dr. Chris.
Yeah, for more details on that. And coming up, we are continuing with our Q of the day. We're going to get to your social media answers. Again, the question is, what's the best way of getting over someone? Give us a call, 833-77-CALL-Q. That's 833-772-2557. We are continuing with our Q of the day.
It's a party. And speaking
party
of...
Party with a purpose, by the way. That's our motto here.
For sure.
On Channel Q.
And then just speaking of this song, Promiscuous Girl, and we're kind of talking about how we, are trying to get over someone. You should be promiscuous. We're on brand.
Q of the day. All right, let's get to our Q of the day. What's the best way of getting over someone? Give us a call, 833-77-CULL-Q. 833-772-2557. Let's get to the answers on social media. And also then I'm going to bring some expert tips for everyone. And they're here to help us too.
Okay. All right. So let's do it. So first up, someone says, ma'am, if you feel they are worthy, it always give them a chance. And if they aren't, it's okay to pass by them, because sometimes overcoming someone is just an illusion.
Oh,
sometimes it's a real need. Interesting, right? Chelsea said, the real truth, think about all the wonderful things you can give yourself that they can't. Wow. When you find acceptance in solitude, true self-growth happens, and you can only open yourself to the right kind of person, our partner, when you are truly ready.
I see, I'm totally proponent of that, but then I also sometimes want to make fun of it like you do, where it's like, here it goes again.
Yeah.
Yes, when I'm alone, I will find love.
I'm going to find the solitude.
You know,
love's going to come knocking on my door.
I must say, that's something that a lot of people have told me, because I've been in two nonstop relationships over 10 years.
Yeah.
They've said, like, be on your own. You need to figure out who you are.
Here's
and
the
then
thing.
You could be with someone.
No shade to my mother, but she believes that, and it's one of those things, because she's also a Christian woman. She's like, the Bible says a man that finds a woman finds a good thing. And it's one of those things where she's like, well, I don't have to go looking for a man. A man will find me when it's time. I'm like, honey, where is he going to do? He's going to literally come onto your front door because you're not going out there. You're not putting yourself out there. So, and you're not on any apps or any dating websites. So how do you do it?
A like, salesperson? One of those door sales people? That, like, that's, knock on your door?
That's the love, like a Jehovah Witness is going to be my mother's next next love interest.
Vanessa, our producer, has something to add.
That's a cliche. Like, I love myself. I am confident in who I am.
Hey.
I just want to, I'm not cocky. But I am just, I'm confident in who I am. And where are the boys? It's just mostly like.
So you're saying your confidence isn't helping you.
Yeah. It's just like the boys don't come that when you're true. Ready. It's like you actually do have to look for them.
Well, maybe it's about you think that you're ready, but you're really not.
But no, see, I don't believe. I mean, maybe I think, but even then, even if you find someone that is like, you know, you're trying to move forward and go with, if you know that you're not, you know, ready to just hop into another relationship, because most of the times a person, if you're trying to get over someone, you're not just ready to go into the next thing, despite Shira Lazar being a relationship hopper.
I think that when you meet someone, you meet someone, and it's hard to create. I hate, my biggest pet peeve is creating rules and boundaries around,
So you hate creating rules and boundaries? Like,
specifically when you meet someone.
So
as
did
long
Harvey
as it,
Weinstein.
No, as long meaning when it feels right. This sounds really bad.
It does.
But like, you know, when you meet someone, it's like, oh my God, but like love is in the air, consensual love.
Okay.
And it feels like it makes sense. And you're like, oh, but I don't want to be hurt, but I want to be this. There, yeah. Obviously, you need to respect that. But then it's just like, go with the flow. This feels right. But maybe
I know,
I'm simplifying
it too
much. I
think that's one of the things that I'm kind of dealing with, that whole going with the flow kind of thing. Like, I enjoy the idea of it. But when you're in it and you're trying to navigate, like, oh, especially maybe if you're like, you know, dating this new person and y'all are trying to take it slow and y'all are kind of friends and then you're trying to figure everything out. It's like, how do you navigate like just wanting to just kiss? Like, I don't know. Like, how do you take things to a certain level when you need to go there? And so it's very hard to sometimes kind of navigate, which I get why you say you hate creating rules and boundaries, because really going with the flow is, that means there's really kind of nothing there. You're going, you know, just seamlessly through a flow.
You need to be present and I'll communicate what you want in the moment and not overthink, like, what if they don't want that?
Yeah.
Right? And like, and you can't judge yourself if they don't want anything in that moment. It's not like, it's not a hit on your self-worth. Like, you need to know yourself well enough, and that goes back to loving yourself, that whatever person comes in, if they're the right person, awesome. If they're not, you're not holding on to it for dear life. Like, I need this. Please don't go away.
So George L. Kendall from Twitter says, tell yourself it's over for good, put that thought in a box and lock it away as deep as you can in your soul. If you have any thoughts of getting that person back, it won't work. You have to be 100% that way. If you run into each other, you can carry on like a stranger. That's actually an interesting concept. So when you see your exes and you're trying, or you see whoever you're trying to get over, do you literally just kind of ignore them like they never existed?
No, that's so dumb. Because guess what? This is how I think, and this is a bit dark.
Okay.
God forbid something happened to that person tomorrow. Would you regret having been like, oh, I don't know who you are, and like all that BS that we create? No. Just be real. And like, I would say, I'm ashamed of my love. Like, I'm never ashamed, and like, I refuse to hold back my heart. Obviously, there's the stalker level, so like, you should not do that. But like, be who you are, and like, if you want to wear your heart on your sleeve and like, and present that, and if they don't take that, that's on them, right? I mean, like, that's hard to get over, though, because it feels like a slap in the face.
I mean, I just don't feel like you... I'm just not a fan of giving someone 100% everything. Like... And not especially if it's a new person. Like, you have to kind of, they have to earn little, it's like you can think about it as notches. Like, they have to earn new notches as time goes, you
so
know?
So for me, I like being, when I'm in person with that person or even messaging, I like to be present and give my, as much of my all. You know what I mean? Be respectful. But then it's in those gaps that the questions start, the self-doubt,
the gray area, the gray gaps,
or when they don't answer a message and all that. Let's go back to our expert advice here. We went on lifehacker.com, and these are some tips on how to handle romantic rejection.
You know, honestly, that sounds like we got expert advice. Lifehacker.com.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so here are some tips. Let yourself grieve.
Okay.
So, like, let yourself feel it, right? It's not bad. I tend to journal, meditate, and, like, I vent to people who are safe, like you.
Yeah.
Or Vanessa, or everyone listening. hot too.
Anyone who will really listen.
It's not as personal as it feels. This is so important. True happiness and joy, you can't unfortunately take it personally. This is the hardest thing because it's hard not to take it personally when it feels personal.
And I don't know if I necessarily believe that. You can't say it's not as personal as it feels. If it feels personal, then it is personal. I think it can be one of those things where everyone's feelings are valid and you can't tell me if I shouldn't be taking something personally or not.
Well, I think that you need to realize the rejection, it's not as much to do with you. It is, but it's more about the person rejecting you.
I'm sorry. I'm going to be on my Mariah Carey. I don't know her. I don't know rejection.
This is here to help you.
Life hacker is wrong.
Okay. Three, hide their number, which is what we got to. 4, try something new. 5, strengthen your other relationships. And just 6, get out there again. And
yes, I like 5. 5 is like strengthen your side pieces.
Exactly. and also just focus on you. Like, what are your passions? What do you get to do? Your work? Like, focus on the to-do list that you have instead of what you can't do right now.
Yeah.
Get it? Can't do that?
You sound nasty.
Once again, Let's Go There is here daily for you on Channel Q, 4 to 7 p.m. Pacific. And I wanted to remind you about something really cool that we're doing on Valentine's Day, February 14th. Someone that I'm seeing, my partner of 5 years, just texted me saying, when is Valentine's Day again?
It's the like, same day every year.
You know, I must say I'm a Jew and I ask when Christmas is, but...
I do that.
Yeah, but I'm a Jew. And like, yeah, so it's that changed.
I get it. Yeah, it's a different dynamic. But you're as
but I do know when Christmas is.
As a man that is your boyfriend, and you guys have been together for 5 years, he should know when Valentine's Day is.
So yeah,
do y'all normally not really celebrate it? Because what's the dynamic there?
Is it? But this is not Loveline yet.
Well, not yet.
Okay, I need to get some advice from Dr. Chris. Speaking of, maybe I should wait for Valentine's Day to have a discussion about this. Channel Q and the world famous Abby are doing Loveline's Valentine hookup. This is so cool. Dr. Chris Donahue will be broadcasting live from the Abbey on February 14th from 7 to 9 p.m. It's a great idea for a day, or if you're single, it's going to be a blast. He'll be answering your questions on sex, love, dating, saving sex lives, one answer at a time, and you could be that life.
Yes,
just saying.
Honey.
You could be that couple.
There's going to be games. There's going to be giveaways. I mean, there's going to be specialty cocktails.
Yes.
And honestly, it sounds like really the best time.
Since we don't have plans... Well, you might have plans.
Yeah.
I don't know
why everybody's trying to put this, non having plan narrative on me for Valentine's Day.
I don't know.
I am very happy.
Well,
kinda.
Head over to wearechannelq.com for more details on that. So now let's wrap things up with our Yaz Queen of the Day.
Yes, Queen.
We do this every day to celebrate someone or a company or,
anything.
People, anything doing awesome things.
Yes, because clearly there's not a lot of that happening.
So this one goes to Disney, who has continued to make history with this Andy Mack character, who we know Andy Mack came out as gay to friends, but actually on the show, a recent episode, he came out to his family. Here's a clip.
There's help. I'm not recognizing anything here.
Okay, well, that, of course, is Aunt Ruthie's Kugel. That's your classic bagel and lox. That's gefilte fish. Skip that. And I'm gay. Yeah? Okay, cool.
Aw, that was Andy Mack Cyrus Goodman, who has become the first Disney character to say, I'm gay. And once again, and we've talked about this on the show, we had known this character was gay because Disney has talked about it, but this was the first time he came out as gay, and it was at, he revealed his sexuality at a Jewish mourning ceremony.
Okay, so wait a second.
For his grandmother, introducing Jonah to his different foods. You heard him say that's gefilte fish because that's like different Jew foods.
Yeah, but is this his first time? Because I thought the big thing about this show was his first time was coming. He said he was gay before.
I thought he had already come out, but it seems like this was a very pivotal moment because he came out to his family.
Oh, his friend. He came out to his friend, Jonah Beck, and who can be considered his family.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think it's one of those things. Also, if I remember from the original clip, you could hear puberty in his voice. Like, his voice got a little bit deeper. So he's grown up, and maybe he's figuring himself out a little bit more.
Yeah. So a lot of people obviously were brought to tears by, the sight of this 13-year-old coming out as gay on the Disney Channel, which a lot of us grew up on Disney, and never before did we have a character like this. So it's a big deal for, this whole storyline. And for the fact that this character is around. So here are some tweets that we love. This person said, I'm effing sobbing. Cyrus Goodman really is the first Disney Channel character to say I'm gay. Another said, I'm actually in tears right now. Disney Channel literally had Cyrus say I'm gay. Like, it's so explicit and there's no way for it to be misinterpreted. And they handled the scene so well and played it out as something you can tell someone when you're ready. And WTF, I'm so happy.
I mean, I will say, and I feel like I always say this when it comes to these things, I can't wait till we get to the time and period in life where coming out is not a storyline.
Yeah.
I honestly feel like it's a little dated, but I think for what it is and for what it represents right now in this current moment, I think it's beautiful. But honestly, I'm over it. Coming out is not a storyline, in my opinion. It's a part of everyday's life.
And
it's great that it's representation right now, and it's something that we don't normally see. But I cannot wait until we get to a point in time in life where we're just like, yeah, no big deal. You don't even have to come out.
It's like Disney Channel had their Ellen moment 20 years late.
Yeah.
Right?
Honestly.
Come on. Anyway, but it's still good. Let's not overlook the good in it.
Oh, no, not at all. We've actually gotten pitched to have someone from this show on.
Awesome.
So maybe, you know, that'll be happening in the near future.
So Yaz Queen to Disney Channel, and you know, to this guy who's playing an awesome historical character. We love it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we will be back tomorrow, same time, 4 to 7 p.m. Pacific. We have got, you know, that sixth grader that went viral and then went on Ellen for performing Gaga's Paparazzi?
Yeah.
Well, he's grown up. Grayson Chance is going to be in the studio with new music, and we're getting into Chris Pratt being under fire again for defending his church that's known to be anti-LGBTQ.
Yep, and then our segment, Hear Me Out, where we have our guys from the Gay Couples Institute giving us all the relationship advice that we so desperately need.
So tune in tomorrow. Let's go there with Cheer and Ryan, 4 to 7 p.m. Pacific on the new Channel Q. We are sending you love and light.
And honey, remember to slay.
We'll see you tomorrow.